All right, everyone, welcome back. It's Simply Bitcoin. We break down the news from Twitter, the daily fail, meme review, software releases, hardware releases, and the websites by plebs. Joining us today, fellow, I'd say, toxic Bitcoiner and co-founder of Start9 Labs. People would probably know it more for the Embassy OS. I'm talking about Matt Hill. He's joining us, but right now, we're going to the numbers. Let's do it.
Number time.
Sponsored by...
The Numbers is brought to you by Bitcoin 2022. Get your tickets now before the price goes up and take advantage of the link down below for 10% off.
At the time of this recording, the block height is 709,137. The Bitcoin price, 64,990. Chain rewrite days, 766. Total public lightning capacity, that is definitely a new all-time high, 3,203.30, and Moscow time, 15:39, blocks to the halving, 130,863. Nico, soon we are going to have a brand new dashboard. It's about to be epic. I know that has nothing to do with the numbers, but we've been taking a look at it, and it's coming soon. So hopefully you all like it. We're going to have a new landing page, new dashboard, good times, and as you could see, the new all-time high price on the public lightning capacity. Do you have any numbers to share with us, Nico, besides the ones that we have just looked at?
Yes, Phil. You know what time it is. It's Satoshi time. We did break an all-time high. Anyways, for anyone who's new to the channel, this is Satoshi the Bitcoin Chicken. He clucks the price of Bitcoin when the price of Bitcoin reaches an all-time high. And it did. It did, but it crashed back down. But while Satoshi was sleeping, that's when it hit it. So he had to cluck. But anyways, Phil, I do have some very interesting numbers. Check this out from Glassnode. Very, very bullish. We're not going to speculate and show you any type of hopium, but this is some actual data that we could look at, right? This is the percent balance of Bitcoin on all exchanges, right? So, you know, you can go start from 2013, go all the way up to 2020. Now, something really interesting started happening in March 2020. That was really when the crash really started happening, the China hash rate, all that jazz. Look at that. The amount of Bitcoin on exchanges is actually being taken out. So what could you surmise from that? People are taking self-custody, right? People are, you know, more long-term thinking. People aren't looking to sell their Bitcoin on exchanges, or else that number would be higher. So it's really, really bullish, Phil. You know, put the speculation aside, right? I just like it from the mere fact that more and more people are taking self-custody of their Bitcoin, and that is a really good thing. Phil?
Bullish on the sovereign individual, right? We were just talking about that. I mean, that is right there to me. That's kind of one of those small indicators, right, that tells us, hey, wait a second, it really does matter that I custody my own Bitcoin and that I understand this. So yeah, you know, why not? Everybody, you know, all the plebs can give themselves a pat on the back, right? Because there's plenty of plebs that aren't on Twitter, but they're plebs anyways, you know? So they just don't know that they're plebs yet. But then, you know, once they meet us, they're like, oh yeah, that's right, we're plebs. So
Matt, do you have any unique observations, anything that we might have missed ourselves when showing you that Glassnode data set?
So no, nothing in particular. You know, something that doesn't show up in the data set is our sort of internal anecdotal evidence and observations that we see from our chat channels and our customers. And all I can say is that there is a ramp up in the hunger for sovereignty, and not just when it comes to custodying your own Bitcoin, but just in general. We more and more are getting people reaching out to us saying, hey, how do I get rid of Google from my life? You know, how do I run my own node? How do I run my own Lightning node? And those questions are just increasing in frequency across all channels. Like, this is, it's getting hot.
Man, that's incredible news. You know, you have to opt out in every level. You know, Bitcoin is just one small facet of that. There's so many other things that you could choose to opt out using internet search engines like DuckDuckGo, for example, right? Using Signal, you know, that are more privacy focused. They're not collecting your data. Very, very interesting, to say the least. But anyways, Phil, it's time for...
The Daily Fail. The Daily Fail is brought to you by Amber App. Check them out, amber.app. It's Bitcoin made easy. It's the easiest way to invest in Bitcoin. Check out the link down below. What's really creepy is that I'm starting to hear you in my dreams, Yellow.
Amber, the smart way to stack sats.
I'm prefacing this fail with just everybody try to keep up with me. I don't think it's that difficult, but at the same time, I'm just going to be pulling at different strings, and it's all shitcoining, and it's all bad for you. Okay? Let's dive into this. So first, what I started off with was finding this, like, on that Crypto Panic app there, that data aggregator. Anyways, found this article. Here's who is actually holding 51% of SHIB supply. Okay, so... You know, obviously, I'm going to go and take a look at this crap and see what's going on. Okay, so here we go. While only 10 wallets hold 72% of SHIB supply, the majority of those are not actual retail traders or whales. Okay. This is where you're going to have to keep up with me because we're not going to dive entirely into this, okay? We're just going to take a snippet and then move on to SHIB itself. And okay, here we go. The 51% wallet. The history behind that wallet currently holds 410 trillion SHIB tokens is simple. It is a burn wallet, address created to remove some part of the supply from circulation for one reason or another. Keep in mind, there is no maximum supply to this shitcoin. So again, just like Ethereum, it's all hocus pocus. It doesn't make a difference. You could burn all the freaking tokens that you want. Okay? Anyways, let's continue. The burn wallet cannot be accessed by just anyone. Hence, funds sent there are not eligible for a refund or any use at all. The largest transaction involving the wallet was made by Vitalik Buterin, who some time ago received a large volume of SHIB tokens. Okay, so let's keep Vitalik there in our back pocket. Let's move on. Our project and ecosystem. From its inception, Shiba Inu has done things differently, starting with a supply of 1 quadrillion. Our founder, Ryoshi, locked 50% in Uniswap, then burned the other half to Ethereum co-founder Vitalik Buterin for safe keeping. What? You burned the other half to a per, but a burn token means it doesn't exist anymore. All right, keep up. Keep up. All right. So Vitalik Buterin for safekeeping. Okay. I don't know. I just had to go take a look at this. This is just ridiculous crap about SHIB. I just figured we'd get a good laugh. Okay. But just put that other stuff on the back burner for a second. Who are the founders of Shiba Inu? Shiba Inu woof paper. That's right, people. It's not a white paper. They're doing things differently. This is a woof paper because Shiba dogs. Okay. All right, here we go. The Shiba Inu woof paper has three reasons why their team created SHIB. This is great. This is fantastic. We started from zero with zero. No. Okay? You started from zero with the expectation of massive profits because you had already seen it done. This is an affinity scam. Anyways, the brilliant minds behind SHIB had never collaborated before. I don't see why anybody gives a shit about that. We love Shiba Inu dogs. Well, that needs to be money. I love collectibles. That should be money. Everybody should back my collectible token. Okay, anyways, we're going to continue because this gets more nefarious, okay? Because you see, Ethereum is somehow involved with the World Economic Forum, and so are many of these... And so are many of these shitcoins. Hold on. I'm gonna present what I believe to be my strings, right? Like that crazy guy in the meme pointing at the... Okay, here we go. Okay? Yes. So, and you see, right? Then half of this Shiba token was given to Vitalik. So, right? All of this scam to steal people's money, right?
Wait, this is... Okay, okay. Wait, Phil, yes. Hold on. Let me rephrase it, okay?
Yes.
There's only space for one Nico Jones. Because if you... Go down
I
the
am
Phil,
not Phil Jones.
If you're going down the Phil Jones, then where this no. show this show's just gonna burn down, bro.
No. There's no tinfoil hat. But I have receipts.
But you said something crazy. You said Ethereum had to do with the World Economic Forum. Prove it. Prove it. Prove it, Phil.
This is my take. All right, here we go. Check this out. That's right. Okay, so check this out. We're going to focus on the Ethereum Foundation. This is what we're going to focus on, and this is how we're going to pull those strings together. So you remember how I told you that they keep this is how they keep the lights on, the shitcoiners. The Ethereum Foundation has had the financials already sorted. So it so happens that co-founder Vitalik Buterin managed to convince the EF to sell up to 70,000 ETH. I'm sure that was really tough to convince those people to dump their bags when the coin peaked in late 2017 and early 2018. Right. So we all know about that bag dumping. So think about the Ethereum Foundation, right? Vitalik Buterin now owns more than 1 billion in Ethereum. OK, so the Ethereum Foundation currently holds 430,000 ETH. Buterin is not the only founder of a blockchain project known for selling their substantial holdings. Right. We were talking about this a couple of days ago. Jed McCaleb, the co-founder of Ripple, also has a history of selling his bags to XRP holders. He's already sold about 60 million XRP this month. The sales netted him 95.4 million. Now, of course, this article is from, let's go back here.
May 3rd, 2021.
Okay. All right. So anyways, so we see there's a lot of bag dumping to keep the lights on. And of course, Phil made a claim. So we're getting to the claim. Okay. Anyways, getting to the claim. But I just want to emphasize the bag dumping, okay? The constant bag dumping and the circle jerking, and I'm helping my friends. Okay, Ethereum Foundation sold ETH to Novogratz at a premium in 2015. 5 years ago, and this was November 2020. 5 years ago, Mike Novogratz, CEO of digital asset-focused financial services firm Galaxy Digital, acquired 500,000 ETH from the Ethereum Foundation, paying a premium price of USD 98 to 99 cents per ETH. Okay. Lots of good bag dumping. Now, let's dive into the executive board of the Ethereum Foundation. And let's pull those strings together. So you have three people, the executive board. You've got Vitalik. You've got Patrick Storchnegger. And you've got Aya Miyaguchi. Who the hell is Aya Miyaguchi, right? Oh. Well, who's this? Oh, I don't know who this is. But she appears to be on the World Economic Forum website. Okay, so there's her, right? So think about it.
So you have more. You have more.
I have more. I do have a little more. Hold on. Okay. So AI originally became fascinated in the blockchain space for its potential to impact financial inclusion in emerging markets. 2013, she joined Kraken as managing director and has since worked to educate the public, VCs, and regulators on cryptocurrencies and blockchain innovation globally. Her passion for blockchain and for creating lasting, sustainable social impact led her to join the Ethereum Foundation as executive director, where she leads the foundation's team and supports the Ethereum ecosystem through core development and research activities and educational efforts around the technology. I mean, like, really? Creating a bunch of useless shit coins that don't need to be money? What are you going to educate people about?
It's because they can control them, dude.
Dude, so wait. So now we're going to move on over to Patrick, okay? So you know how, like, we kind of noticed that Ethereum doesn't really get touched, right, by the regulators? Kind of interesting. Kind of interesting that they don't get touched, right?
Oh,
because we all know what they're doing. So here we go. So Patrick, all right, so here we go. Patrick is an attorney at law, notary public, and acts as compliance and AML officer for Amr Capital. He's also an external auditor of the Ziegler Cantonal Bank, member of the board of trustees of the Ethereum Foundation, member of VQF, a self-regulatory organization for anti-money laundering purposes. Brings many years of international tax law, corporate law, and capital market law, and advises several international companies, including those engaged in trading, reassurance, transportation, and blockchain technology. It's good to have an AML officer on your side sometimes, huh? Okay, so let's proceed on to, you remember, you know, the shitcoins, what I said is that they're related to the World Economic Forum. All right, so we have a tweet here from the World Economic Forum. Here's how many companies can make sure they are blockchain ready, and they are shilling Chainlink. Okay, Chainlink pretends to solve the Oracle problem, okay, by having one centralized company where you can go and sit there and stake your tokens and quote unquote secure the Oracle data. So guys, when we tell you that shitcoining is a scam, when we tell you that they are all linked together, I mean, we are just unraveling the layers of this onion. I mean, come on, the executive director of the ETH Foundation is part of the World Economic Forum. We've already exposed that Meltem works for the World Economic Forum.
AML officer that works for them, and then you wonder why you never hear any problems for them?
Mm-hmm. Dude.
Anyways, look.
But remember, I've actually been saying this for a couple days now, how shitcoins need the government, they need the nation state to survive, right? Because the level of centralization that they have, right? If you look at Ethereum, for example, most of Ethereum nodes, because they're so resource intensive, unlike Bitcoin, run on Amazon Web Services, right? So if a nation state, if a government did want to shut down or at least hamper the Ethereum network, they could do so. So you kind of see the same thing with Brian Armstrong as well. You know, he's flying over there. He's trying to, you know, grease some palms in DC as well, right? And that's because they don't want, you know, their shitcoin casino scam pulled by the state. If you contrast that with Bitcoin, because it's decentralized, right? Bitcoin doesn't need the nation state. Bitcoin could work a parallel to the nation state. But man, the level of evil there that you just uncovered, Phil, holy crap, man. Like, I thought badly of Ethereum because it's a shitcoin, it's a pre-mined shitcoin. But dude, now they're associated with the World Economic Forum. Some evil people there. And yeah, man. And of course, they have the compliance guy to make sure that they don't get, you know, effed in the AML, KYC, you know, point or whatever. So yeah, man, that's absolutely crazy, Phil Jones. Anyways, Matt, what do you think?
What do I think? that was a lot. Look, if the overall thesis of everything you just did is that scammers going to scam and people are going to take advantage of imperfect information and chaotic markets and new technologies that are widely misunderstood, point taken. I think most people can agree that those things are going to happen. They've happened in the past with stocks, right? A long time ago, when people were selling stock certificates for companies that didn't exist to moms and pops going door to door. That's sort of why, at least the narrative goes, why something like the SEC even exists, is to protect the moms and pops from these, you know, scammers who would you know, abuse the lack of information of their victims in order to sell them worthless pieces of paper. As we all know, the SEC only exacerbates the problem by institutionalizing scamming at the highest levels of society. The fact that scammers going to scam has always been the case. And the question is, well, you know, what do you do about it? And it sounds like you guys are on your thesis to educate, to prevent people from getting scammed by presenting education.
Yeah, man. And I think Matt, you know, you touched upon something there, very interesting. Look, this is, you know, a war between freedom and slavery, right? You know, the future of central bank digital currencies versus a future with Bitcoin, an open monetary network. And we all have a role to play in this information war, whether it's Matt, you know, developing hardware to, you know, to take more sovereignty over your life, whether it's Phil and I, content creators, Nico and Phil Jones, you know, kind of calling out the evil that's going on, you know, the scams, right? Everyone has a role to play. You don't need to be a coder. Find what you're passionate about. Give back to Bitcoin. Contribute back to Bitcoin. Anybody can. But anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily Meme Review. The Daily Meme Review is brought to you by Citadel 21. It's the best Bitcoin cultural zine. Get yourself a physical copy. There's only 1,000 made. Check out the artwork. It's unique for every volume. Check out Citadel21.com. Guys, I fucked up. Matt doesn't develop hardware. I mean, kinda. But he mostly develops software, because Embassy OS is software. So I apologize. My mistake. But anyways, getting to the meme review. We have no shame on Simply Bitcoin, okay? We own our mistakes. But anyways, getting to the meme review. First meme is brought to us by Limbig. Phil, you know I can't read. Limburger 3T. Don't try to correct me. Anyways, it's Bitcoin, not crypto, so thanks, but no thanks. What shitcoins make you think, crypto, BTC, the reality, Bitcoin, crypto. This is so true, man, and the mainstream media wants to make you think that it's this, but in reality, it's the orange coin, baby. Next one, next meme, brought to us by our buddy, BTC Sessions, Bitcoiners, new all-time high, Steve Hanke, Peter Schiff, Nassim Taleb, Nero Rabini, absolutely hilarious, and this meme is really interesting, because this foreshadowed, these were the forefather, the cartoonists were the forefathers of today's memers, right? Mm-hmm. And this was a 1912 cartoon about Alfred Owen Crozier, and I might be mistaken here, the Aldrich plan. This is what I read in the Creature from Jekyll Island. Aldrich was the senator that essentially put this meeting together with all these shady banking figures. They had this secret meeting, and they came up with the monstrosity of the Federal Reserve. And some people were wise enough to understand that, right? You know, you have the U.S. Treasury, you have the U.S. Capitol, you have the White House, you have the New York Stock Exchange, you have the bank, you have the farm, you have the factory. Everything's just being taken. It's taken into the Federal Reserve, and that's exactly what the Federal Reserve does when it prints, right? Even the founding fathers, we read you guys a couple quotes. George Washington was not a fan of central banking. Thomas Jefferson was not a fan of central banking. I'll pop up some of their quotes. But the point is, man, is that obviously the Federal Reserve, their original, you know, what they were meant to do is control inflation and control unemployment. But they've been a total disaster, because what they've created essentially since 1971, since we got off the gold standard, is they've created the Cantillon effect, right? When they print money, the people, they enrich the state and they enrich the elite, because the rest of the U.S. does not have the means to save in equity, save in real estate, save in hard assets. So they save in cash, right? And that cash is constantly being devalued, and it gets redistributed literally from the lower class, from the middle class, back to the top 1%. And back to the state, right? So that's what we're fighting. This is the fight, you know, this is the fight for freedom. But anyways, I'm going to give those memes, Phil, this really, really cool open dime pin from our friend at BTC Pins. What about you, Phil? What are you going to give it?
Okay. Yeah, those were epic memes. I love the one from 1912. I mean, that is insane. And it just makes me want to say to everybody, you have to read or listen to The Creature from Jekyll Island. Okay, like that is absolutely mandatory reading, you know, to understand what, you know, how this banking system has transformed so many times. Anyways, I am giving those epic memes a very epic score. I'm giving it my reproduction, the mystery machine from Scooby-Doo that I built. I usually keep everything in mint, but this is like the one thing that I built, because it's just like plastic, and man, you know, that's never going to be finite.
That was my favorite cartoon, Scooby-Doo. They were super high in every single one of their episodes, bro. That's why that's why they had the munchies the entire time, bro.
What do you mean? Those snacks are perfectly normal.
And okay? the smoke coming out of the mystery machine.
Nico, and the sandwiches that they made, those are perfectly normal sandwiches that anybody would want at any time of day. Come on.
Anyways, Matt, what would you give those memes?
I have almost nothing on my desk.
See, unlike us, he's actually like clean, like he's like a proper desk. Yeah.
You know, like what's left of this nice Johnny Walker Black. It's smooth. Strong, powerful, just like those memes.
Ooh, I like it. I like that. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, and respect.
And yeah, fancy. Put it in the glass jar.
Yeah, I don't think we've gotten that score yet.
I'm a tequila man. I'm a tequila man myself. Scotch whiskey kicks my ass. I like just tequila on the rocks. You know, but anyways, guys, cool. Do you agree with our scores? Do you disagree? Let us know down in the comment section and join our Telegram group. Link us some Bitcoin memes to review. because it's a Bitcoin meme review and we need memes to review. But anyways, Phil, it's time for the daily news brought to you by Crypto Cloaks. Get yourself the best 3D printed Bitcoin merch, like this 3D printed Bitcoin grenade art. Super cool stuff. Take advantage of the link down below for 5% off. So I signed up for Twitter Blue. And it's pretty cool because they, like, the threads, they'll just make it easier to read so you don't have to scroll through each individual tweet. Pretty cool stuff. Anyways, this was a very infamous tweet by Dave Troy. He just completely started attacking Bitcoin, saying all these things. It was a whole ruckus on Twitter. You know how it is, guys. No one debunks this stuff on YouTube. So it falls to us on Simply Bitcoin just to go through each one of his arguments and, you know, give a counter argument. But anyways, Dave Troy says, I can't stress this enough. The crypto attack on the dollar is not a strictly a pump and dump or grift. It's an ideological driven attack on the legitimacy of fiat currency, the Federal Reserve, and the incumbent financial system. It is the sequel to the January 6th attack. I want you guys to remember this part, okay? Whatever you feel about the January 6th attack, you have to understand that half the country don't believe the official narrative of the January 6th attack. We are not political on this show, but I just want to point that out. Now, I'm going to connect this with this book. Remember this book, Phil, that we also covered on the show? The Politics of Bitcoin Software as Right-Wing Extremism. Okay, so he brings up a couple other points, which is it's an ideological-driven attack on the legitimacy of the fiat dollar. Bitcoin does not attack the fiat dollar. What it does is it shines a light of truth on the fiat dollar that is very inconvenient to them. Let's talk about legitimacy. More than 40% of US dollars in existence have been printed. This goes back to all the way to 1960. Check out 2020. Money printer go burr, right? Now let's check more about the legitimacy of the fiat dollar, right? This is the Mandrake mechanism, the justification on how, you know, the Fed is allowed to print money, right? They offer treasury bills, they offer bonds, they offer them to the open market buys them, and then they issue cash. The problem is that no sovereign wealth fund or no one on the face of the earth has $80 billion to buy, you know, $80 billion to buy, you know, treasury bills every month. And that's how much money is being printed. So guess who buys it? The Fed themselves. So the same people that are printing the money are the same people that are buying the, it's ludicrous. Okay. So again, going back to this tweet, right? The legitimacy of the dollar, this is already in the grave. Right. And not only to add that, OK, because this is Bitcoiner stuff. Look, they're printing a lot of money. The Fed asset sheet. Phil and I have been calling about the record amount of inflation incoming since January. And all of the mainstream media has been lying about it. And the reason that Phil and I knew was because it was common sense. Check this out. Record amount of money printing. And you know what that leads to? Inflation jumped 6.2% in October, biggest monthly rise in 30 years. Okay, so let's go back to his tweets. It's an ideological-driven attack on the legitimacy of the fiat dollar. No. The fiat dollar is broken in the first place, and Bitcoin inconveniently pointed that out. So that's BS. But I want you guys to be aware of this because they will use this as an attack vector, saying that, you know, they're relating it to anything. Remember, anything that is against the official narrative is an attack on democracy. We've shown you the articles from Nayib Bukele, right? Anything that is an attack on the official narrative is related to January 6th, racism, all that BS. Anyways. Just as January 6th was not successful, this faces serious headwinds, but as an ideological attack, they are convinced their cause is just. That's because it is. Just because it's insane doesn't mean just because it's insane. Who's more insane? Who's more insane? Someone that believes in the fiat system, right? That benefits the elite and the state? or someone who believes in an all-inclusive monetary network that could give someone Bitcoin or private property in a country where they would not have been able to before. If you live in Afghanistan, they cut Afghanistan from the legacy financial system. Bitcoin works in Afghanistan, not an issue at all. So who's the insane one? Anyways, moving on. We're increasingly seeing a drumbeat from elected officials and other undermining the legitimacy of the Federal Reserve and the dollar. Doubt this is at peril. This is a revenge for the New Deal. This is just a small example. Or could it be that the incentives of Bitcoin are better than the incentives provided by the legacy financial system? Anyways, moving on. What they think is perfect Austrian economics and dominating the dirty central bankers who have corrupted money and finance and the Fed was created in 1913, do not minimize this as a sideshow. This is a full frontal assault. He's correct on that. It is. And Bitcoin wins at the end. The millions of billions of people who depend on the stability of the current financial system. This is a total joke. What stability? Did I not just show you this? What stability is he talking about? What stability is he talking about? The record amount of money printing. This guy is absolutely insane. And he calls us a cult. The millions and billions of people who depend on the stability of the current financial system for all the talk of protecting vulnerable people from crypto land, they give zero fucks about those with 401ks and are just trying to live a dignified life in peace. The issue with that is that those 401ks, look at what happened in the financial crisis. You know who got bailed out? Wall Street did. You know who had to foot the bill? Main Street did. People lost their life savings, and the bankers got bonuses. Anyways, moving on. A hostile assault by a bunch of libertarian fascists is not how democracies attempt to deal with shared challenges. This attack is every bit as dangerous as January 6th. It's happening in stealth before everyone's eyes wake up. Okay, so I want to focus on this part, okay? He calls us fascists, right? Calls the current, you know, the Bitcoin movement fascist, and the fiat movement is not fascist. Let's look back in time to Executive Order 6102, where FDR literally stole Americans' gold and sold it for more. Let's check out the article. Executive Order 6102 required all persons to deliver on or before May 1st, 1933, all but a small amount of gold coin, gold bullion, and gold certificates owned by them to the Federal Reserve in exchange for $20 per troy ounce. The price of gold from the Treasury for international transactions was then raised by the Gold Reserve Act to $35 an ounce. So essentially, they made people trade sound, hard money, gold. They gave them a lower price, and in return, they got a shit coin, which was the dollar, and then they used the sound money, and they sold it at a higher price. You know what doesn't allow them to do that? Bitcoin. So who's the fascist now, man? And if it wasn't for us at least countering his BS, nobody else will. Phil?
Okay, you know what? This guy's a spook, okay? Because this nonsense about making Bitcoin about politics, right? This is very dangerous to me. The fact that he keeps repeating this January 6th narrative, like, make no mistake, the money was broken, as you showed clearly. The money was broken long before Bitcoin, okay? The only thing that happens is that it was very difficult to measure how broken it was without Bitcoin.
But Phil, hold on a second. The reason that he's trying to frame it that way is because in Bitcoin, it's unconfiscatable, or it's very hard to confiscate, right? So he has a problem that the state doesn't have the ability to seize people's assets and redistribute the wealth. That's the issue that he's fundamentally having, and that's why he's having a panic attack. And you can connect that with the January 6th thing and that book on Amazon, How the Politics of Bitcoin Are Right-Wing Extremism. I'm sorry, Phil, to cut you off.
No, it's okay. I was going to say, like, personally, I don't give a shit what his ideals are about or anything like that. All I know is that he's trying to make Bitcoin about U.S. politicking, okay? And to me, that is a weak frickin' play. That is a complete weak frickin' play that is designed to work, I'm sorry to say this, but on, like, the most ignorant of people. Okay, and this guy's a freaking spook. Like, this guy is part of the, like, this guy is part of the problem. He's not a part of the solution, and he's proved that with what he's explaining. Like, he's just a statist.
He absolutely, absolute statist. Matt, you have any thoughts before we move on to Embassy OS?
Yeah, I mean, that tweet thread is obnoxious. You might call it insane. I call it tactful. If you're coming from his angle, it is intentionally designed to destroy the mind. Okay, so, you know, saying something like oxymoronic, like libertarian fascist, right? Calling those two words are not. You cannot have a libertarian fascist. That's like having a short, tall person, right? They're completely opposite ends of the political spectrum, and so to equate libertarianism and fascism serves one purpose alone, which is to destroy people's ability to think about politics. And when where a vacuum exists, it can be filled with the largest microphone. Okay, so if you just wipe everyone's brains out with this obnoxious rhetoric that makes absolutely no sense, they're ready to be filled with whoever comes across as the most authoritative person, the person wearing the suit, the person wearing the doctor's outfit, whatever it may be, because they are ideologically and intellectually incapable of defending themselves. And that is exactly what that rhetoric is intended to do. And that is just a tiny little example of this taking place on a much, much larger scale. Like, how many times in the last couple of years have you said to yourself, this is crazy what's going on right now? It makes no sense, right? How many times have you uttered the phrase, this makes no sense? That's the point. It's not that they're idiots. It's that they're extremely competent in how to destroy concepts in order to create concepts that perform the opposite function. It's a malicious tactic that works against a low self-esteem, uneducated populace.
Man, it was beautifully put. And you know, I originally come from Venezuela. So these are Marxist tactics 101. That's what they do. They're meant to, you know, essentially incite chaos, right? And through that chaos, right, they redefine, you know, definitions, right? And, you know, unfortunately, to quote Vladimir Lenin's words, right, you know, there's a lot of useful idiots that, you know, buy into that, thinking that these people will provide something better for them, but they never do if you study history. But anyways, moving on to something more positive. Guys, we touched upon this earlier, right, about how this idea that the internet today is highly centralized. Okay, so you store your data with, you know, with Google, if you're uploading to YouTube, if you're using the Signal app, right, you know, you are still, you know, something with the Signal servers. I don't know the technicalities of it. You know, if you want to be a little bit more private, right, you could use Proton Mail, but recently a judge did make Proton Mail give up IP addresses. The whole point, though, is that you're relying on someone else's server. You're relying, when people say cloud computing, all that means is someone else's computer, right? So, and what that allows the government to do, right, is it allows them to strong arm those people and give up that information. But we are heading into a future, and Matt is on the forefront of this, where individuals, to take back their own sovereignty, are going to start running those servers at home themselves, right? And that's going to give the individual tremendous amount of power. That's the future that we're heading in. That's why I wanted to bring Matt on today to the show to talk about that. But first, let me give you guys a little bit of context. It's not only Matt, you do have some competition. Bitcoin personal server developer Umbra raises $3 million in seed rounds. But the reason I wanted to pull this up is because I think this really summarizes this. The cloud doesn't exist. It's just someone else's computer. As people decloud over this decade, personal servers will become as ubiquitous as the internet routers today, right? And to pull up Start9's website, right? Go back to this idea of self-hosted stuff. Embassy is an elegant plug-and-play personal server for running self-hosted software. It sits quietly on your shelf, running all day and night, your own private cloud, right? So, Matt, what are the benefits of this? I touched upon this in an earlier show, private email servers, private messaging, where it's peer-to-peer. You don't have to rely on if I send a message to Phil, if from me to Signal servers, then from Signal servers to Phil. Enlighten us, man. Tell us about the future. Tell us about where this is going. This is honestly, this makes me so hopeful for individual sovereignty.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the current internet is centralized. And where it is centralized is actually not at the core of the internet, the lower layer protocols. It's centralized primarily at the service layer, right? The service providership layer. So the apps that you use on your phone, the apps that you use on your desktop, when you visit a website. As you are doing all of these things, whenever you're text messaging friends and family, storing data, you are doing this through a third party, right? Oftentimes one of the big four, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Amazon, there are others. But essentially what that boils down to kind of bring it home, is that you are asking for permission every time you want to do anything on an electronic device. And if you think about that, right, what that means is you're basically a child, you're a dependent, okay? It's like a kid raising your hand and saying, may I go to the bathroom? Adults don't do that. They go to the bathroom. You, as an adult, you do what you need to do in this world. You do not ask permission for every simple, benign, perfectly safe thing that you want to do. But that is exactly what you're doing every time you pick your phone up, open up iMessage or your Google Messenger or even something like Telegram. You are essentially asking someone permission for the simple ability to send a friend, family member, significant other a message that says hello. You're raising your hand and asking permission to do that. And while you might not notice that as a negative every day of your life, at scale, this can become actually quite dangerous. And it can become dangerous because one, that information is centralized and can be hacked. It can be requested by authorities without a warrant, by the way. The Fourth Amendment does not stand up against data held on a third-party server. It can be cut off. You can be censored. If you become an undesirable of either the corporate entity or the government entity, you can be cut off from using this technology. And lastly, you can be, frankly, extorted. We don't see it now because it's free, right? Which means they're collecting your data and monetizing it. But as more and more people wake up against this and say, hey, I don't want my data collected. I don't want you to monetize my data. Guess how they're going to monetize? They're literally just going to take cash. They're going to say, oh, your whole life rides on Google Cloud. Well, give us money or your life is gone. And so expect the extortion to ramp up as the privacy concerns ramp up alongside of it. So this is a disaster in the making. There is only one way out, and that is disintermediation. It is to cut out the middlemen. We must eliminate middlemen from our digital lives. As it stands, that is an extremely hard problem to solve, okay? Because what it requires is not just some new app. Okay, you have to take back the infrastructure. You have to put the infrastructure in the home of every man, woman, and child. Okay, children don't live on their own, they live with the men and women, but the home of families and individuals. All right, and the way that you do that is personal servers, like you just showed. So, we make a personal server. Primarily, we make a personal server operating system. Because if you're going to have grandmas and grandpas and everyday people running personal servers, it's going to have to be easy, really, really easy. And currently, running a personal server is really, really hard. So Start9 and a few others, as you mentioned, are pursuing this end game of making it possible for an individual to run a personal server out of their home and then to access all the various things they want to do on the internet, whether it's messaging, data storage, financial transactions, whatever it is, with no trusted third parties at all. It is the holy grail of personal computing. It requires the construction, brick by brick, from the ground up construction of a new internet. That's a very, very bold, grand thing to say, but it is essential. It is going to happen. And if we have anything to say about it, we're going to be a big part of it.
Absolutely, man. And you know, Phil has been telling me so much about Embassy and what you guys have been doing. I love the approach that you guys are taking. And, you know, before I pass off the last question to Phil, if you, you know, had a crystal ball and you would say in 10 years, where is this going to be? And let me preface that question. The cost of hardware, as we all know, gets cheaper and cheaper. The cost of data gets cheaper and cheaper. I feel like one of the biggest constraints right now is the cost of hardware, right? The way that I see it is everyone already has a router in their house. Why can't that router also serve as a server? So where is this going in the next 10 years, 20 years? How fast is this transition gonna happen in? And add a little bit to what these personal servers are gonna be capable of. So for example, would I be able to send a message to Phil if I was running my own personal server and Phil was not?
You can do that today with our device. You can message friends and family or whoever you want in a peer-to-peer, fully end-to-end encrypted, onion-routed way, as in it is, the most private way to communicate with another human being across time and space that has ever existed. We can make that claim. Now, it has been possible before us, but it required a high degree of technical expertise. What we have done is taken the barrier to entry down. So you can do that today. I do that today. We have, you know, personal cloud storage so that you don't have to use things like Dropbox. We have Matrix, which is a peer-to-peer messenger such that you can create groups of friends or DMs without any third-party involvement, fully encrypted, onion routed, the whole deal. Mastodon, you can host your own social media server, so that way you can post things and literally there's nobody on earth that could possibly take it down or kick you off the platform. Now, those are largely ghost towns. Not a lot of people hang out in these decentralized social media platforms, but that'll change over time as centralized social media providers abuse their power more and more. You can run a Bitcoin node, you can run a Lightning node, which gives you full financial sovereignty. Nobody can tell you no to spending your money. It's sort of the corollary to not your keys, not your coins, right? This is the not your server, not your data, and not your access either. If you're not running your own server, somebody can just refuse to broadcast your Bitcoin transaction. You'll have to find somebody else who won't refuse. So personal servers here, they're working, they're great. It's going to get better and better and better. We have a massive release coming out in a few weeks that is a total game changer. We're already in the lead here. You had brought up Umbral before. They have absolutely been taking their cue from us from day one. Everything they've come out with, we came out with almost a year before. We're ahead, we're better. We're not as good at marketing. They're absolutely better at marketing than us, but we're about to step that game up too, so don't worry. But anyway, it all works, it's all here. You had mentioned routers. So you're right, everyone already has a router in their home. There's no way that existing routers in people's homes are going to be mutated to also be personal servers. However, we can accomplish the inverse. Personal servers can very easily be made into routers. So that is the direction we're going in. In the future, embassies, if they're even called that, by the time we come out with this particular product, will also service as your home router. So you'll have a personal server and a router all in one. And then that's just the beginning, because we all know what's coming, right? Like, what does the future hold? Go look at a sci-fi movie. Do you see people sitting there and typing at computers and making their own coffee? No. You see them doing things in the air and drones flying around and robots making coffee. Who is going to control the smart future, the smart home future? Is your thermostat, your door locks, your vacuum cleaner, are they all going to be plugged into a third-party cloud that could suddenly turn them against you or turn them off or lock you out of your home, right? This is no longer like Google's reading my emails. I don't like it. This is like Google controls the locks to my home and can kill me if they want to. Okay. It's a much darker potential future. And if you walk into a boardroom at Google or Apple, I guarantee you that's exactly what they're talking about. That is exactly the future they want to build, where they are in control, not only of your data and your communications, but of your physical space and being. And the governments want it too, because through Google and Apple, they can also control. So the only way out of this is what we have come to refer to as sovereign computing. Computing that is fully disintermediated and not dependent on any third parties. And it extends to IoT devices. There is no reason at all that in the near future, by the way, I'm not talking about 10 years from now, I'm talking, you know, a order of magnitude less than that. We will be selling a video camera, for instance, where you'll be able to plug a surveillance camera up in your home or outside your house, and in a matter of minutes, have that camera syncing footage to your personal server, which can then be viewed from anywhere in the world by you and you alone. So you can start to build out your smart home without the involvement of third parties. That's what we are doing as a company.
Phil, did I call the router thing or did I call the router thing? I called that a year ago, bro.
The router was an absolute, like, it that occurred to us very early on. And you have to build incrementally. You can't just have the farm because you want the farm. You got to build it piece by piece. And we know where we're going. We have a strong vision. We have a great team. And we're going to get there piece by piece.
Absolutely, man. And we're super, super happy that you're on the side of freedom, man. I'll just say that. Phil, you want to tie it up?
Actually, you know what? It doesn't even matter what my question was anymore because you got me so bullish on the product. But I just want to say that I do love, I love my Embassy node. That was, you know, I got it a long time ago. And yes, the user experience for that thing, like you guys were definitely the first, you know, the first to have the marketplace and everything. Like I, you know, as soon as I saw that, I was like, okay. You know, when I saw Umbrell did it, I'm like, okay. I know where they got this, but it is by far the easiest user experience that I had to set up a node, especially for that level of privacy. Okay, like it was absolutely simple and really a joy. So a lot of people don't get the user experience right, but my question to you is, in the I haven't done an update in a long time, but do you guys support the hard drive, the SSD?
Yeah, no, that's coming with 0.3.0,
nice.
Which is the huge milestone release we've been working on for going on 8 months now. We are about 4 months behind when we originally anticipated it might be ready. And it's just huge. It grew on us. It scope creep set in. But we demoed it at the Atlanta Bitcoin Conference last week. So it is in a live demo state ready. It's not fully packaged and ready to go out the door yet, but the thing is close and it really is a game changer. Not only does it add external drive support, which gives us all the power that we were lacking before, it was really the one benefit that something like Umbrell or MyNode had on us was this ability to run a full archival node and just the speed that comes along with SSD support. But you know, no big deal. We got that now. But it really was a rewrite of the operating system. It is fast. It is performant. It's clean. It's beautiful, man. You're going to love it.
Was already amazing. Sorry.
Super bullish. Super bullish. Yeah. Awesome.
Super bullish.
And remember what I've been saying, guys. Take sovereignty back on each level. It's not just good enough to take your sovereignty back on a financial level. Start taking sovereignty back on every other level. Do not become dependent on third parties. That's a point of weakness. That being said, Phil, there was an open source software release today. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Software releases. Software releases is brought to you by CipherSafe. Check them out, ciphersafe.io. Physical stainless steel products to stop you from losing your Bitcoin in terrible situations. The link is down below in the show notes. We've got Hexawallet version 2.0.0. That is a Bitcoin wallet that I have yet to try out. There's so many Bitcoin wallets I haven't tried out. The link's down below in the show notes. Check it out.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil. All right, guys, I want to give a shout out to our awesome guest. He blew our minds today. Man, this is taking back sovereignty on another level. You can go give him a follow at underscore Matt Hill underscore. Definitely give at Start9 Labs a follow and check out start9.com, a personal server for everyone. Bitcoin, Lightning, messaging, data, social. Take back your sovereignty on every single damn level. Guys, that was our show. If you enjoyed the show, you know what to do. Smash that like button. And of course, if you want to continue hearing the Bitcoin news from the people perspective and the catastrophic fails from Ethereum is apparently part of the World Economic Forum now. Definitely consider subscribing to Simply Bitcoin, and we will see you tomorrow, guys, for another episode.
Take your sovereignty back. It's time for Bitcoin.